We are interviewing Joanne Claver, and this is Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. And Joanne.
Okay. I was born in Pueblo, Colorado on December 21st, 1942, on the darkest day of the year. And one story my mother tells about my birth is that when she was in the hospital, the nun came in a few days later. They stayed in the hospital longer at that time. And she had a cupcake with a candle on it. And my mother said, "Oh, whose birthday is it?" And the nun said, "Well, it's Jesus's birthday." Did you know that? But anyway, I was born to first generation parents, American parents. And Dad's parents, the Novaks, were from Slovenia. And Mom's, the Simoniches, were from Croatia. I never, ever saw my two grandmothers together. I think there was always some rift between the Croatians and the Slovenians that carried over when they came to America. Dad was really a hard worker. He instilled a hard work ethic with us, and he only had an eighth grade education. He was in he had been in a flood situation at their house right about the time he was in eighth grade, and the Red Cross had given them the clothes they were supposed to wear. And he went to high school in short pants. And just at that time, the boys were starting to wear long pants. And he got made fun of, and he quit school. But he did get to go to electrical school in Coyne in Chicago. It was an electrical-type school. And he came back to Pueblo. And there was the way they doled out the work is the men would come to the electrical shop, sit there, and hope to be called on to be working. And, of course, there was favoritism. This made him become a staunch union advocate. Later on, as he worked as an apprentice, a neighbor encouraged him to go into business. And my back porch bedroom of our small little house became an office, and he built a shop behind our house. Mom became his bookkeeper, and he worked about 70 hours a week. He prospered because it was the post-war building boom and had a contract to wire, I don't know, well over 100 houses, I think, in a subdivision, an entire subdivision. He had about 15 to 20 journeymen, all union, of course, working for him at that time. Plus, Mom was doing the office work, and I was helping him sort materials at night. I probably didn't do that much, but I always felt like I did. When I was about 12 years old, Dad built another shop on the other side of town behind the back of a lot that had a 13-unit apartment building. The apartment building was called Hazard Block, of all things, named after a Mr. Hazard. So now, as people moved out of each unit, Dad not only worked in his shop and did all this work for his contracting business, but he also refurbished each unit as people moved out. I was old enough to help sand and paint, and my mother got the wonderful job of cleaning up all the stoves and cleaning the refrigerators. And my brother, who was probably about 8 years old at that time, I always remember him just holding the flashlight for my dad as my dad did the plumbing and the electrical work. We did get a reward for our work. It was an 8-ounce bottle of Pepsi. During my senior year, a house that Dad had wired for a man became quickly available for sale. It was upscale for us. It was really a nice place compared to what we had lived in. I surmised that Dad paid cash for this. The owner's name was Scotty Spinuzzi, and he moved next door to a house that he had built for his son, and just right next door. The Spinuzzis left almost all the furniture, down to the bedding in the linen closet. I didn't realize how weird this was. My brother and I were warned to stay clear of Scotty because of his temper. And I later learned and have read about, he's rather infamous, that he was not only a part of organized crime, he was the godfather of the Colorado Mafia. Pueblo was called the Little Chicago. He had, one of the things that he did is he had killed a man, it was a pianist, in a club that he owned. And he was acquitted because nobody saw the bullet leave the gun. This has been written up in magazine articles. My parents always didn't want me to be anywhere close to him because of his temper, and evidently he was well known for that. When I was growing up, my parents always expected me to go to college. All my schooling was in Catholic schools. And even in freshman year, the Sisters of Charity, who taught us, recruited the girls with the highest GPAs to take a course in dietetics so that they could work at the hospital that these nuns also managed. I got the first job available, as what was called, the name of the position was called patient contact aide. I was 14 and a half. It was 20 hours a week supervising a hospital tray room for the dinner meal, and then a split shift each weekend at 35 cents an hour. And it was kind of nice because now I didn't have to help my dad so much in the shop. Senior year, I took chemistry, and in a 30-minute study hall, decided what career I wanted and where I wanted to go to college. I chose what was then called medical technology and now is renamed clinical laboratory scientist. I was accepted at Creighton University, a Jesuit school in Omaha. At Creighton, my counselor, a Dr. Sheehan, asked me if I wanted a part-time job. He was a pioneer in doing pap smears, and I got to stain his slides for him for almost 4 years. My senior year, I was still working for him, and I was taking a year internship, which was part of getting this degree in medical technology. And I had been working for 50 cents an hour. And I told him that since I was in training that I deserved a raise, and he gave it to me. I got 75 cents an hour. It was quite a thing. That year, I also met my husband. It was a blind date. He was tall, dark, and handsome, and smart, and sort of a Catholic. He was attending the University of Nebraska. After I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Medical Technology, I worked for 3 months in Pueblo, and then I moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, where the University of Nebraska is located. I had a former roommate lived there, and she was getting her master's there, and so we rented an apartment together, and I got a job at Lincoln General Hospital. After the unexpected death of one of my supervisors there, I was promoted to hematology supervisor. Laboratory science at that hospital was way behind, and I was glad to see some advances made while I worked there. After several years, we were married in the Catholic Church, and a year later, our first son was born. I continued to work full-time while my husband finished his civil engineering degree and later his master's at the University of Nebraska. After that, we moved to Lawrence, Kansas, so that my husband could pursue his PhD at the University of Kansas. I got a job at the Student Health Center and pursued my PhD, putting hubby through. Our second son was born in Lawrence, and although I had hoped to eventually be a full-time mom and homemaker, the need was there for me to work full-time. The students at the health center were fun to work for and not very sick, and the physicians and the staff there had a camaraderie with all the personnel, and there was lots of friendship. It was a fun job. In the era of emerging racial tensions at that time, and KU had buildings that were burned in protest. I had a gal that worked with me who was a technologist, and she was Black, and I remember her fear of being caught in a barricade of Blacks and not being able to get through when she was on call. It was also the Vietnam era, and my husband's college deferment was not so secure, especially since he was a second lieutenant in the National Guard. His unit had been on special training alert. I was grateful he was never called. His pending graduation meant job hunting, and I suggested that when he graduated that we'd go to somewhere different, and I was thinking Australia or Germany, and he chose to apply to the University of Alaska. I was warned by one of the physicians at the clinic that if we went to Alaska, I would get arthritis. And I was given an article on the problem of alcoholism and cabin fever in Alaska. And of course, this article was in a very, it was in the Scientific American, so it had to be true. He was invited for an interview and came back so enthusiastic, they had wined and dined him. And the head of the engineering department even had a small basketball court in his home, and they all helped each other build houses there. He was so excited, and with my reluctant approval, he accepted the position as an associate professor of environmental engineering at UAF. My parents helped us purchase a station wagon, and we shipped a few things, and then with our two boys, ages 3 and 1.5, drove to Vancouver, BC, and then took the ferry to Haines, on to Fairbanks. It was August of 1970. Campus housing was awarded on the basis of rank and the number of children. The wife didn't count at all. We did not have enough points to qualify, and finding housing in Fairbanks at that time was difficult. However, we were thankful that a high school classmate of my husband lived here, and he knew of a place on Egan Avenue close to the Pioneer Home. It was a downstairs unit of a duplex, fairly new and quite roomy, and had a heated garage with a shared washer and dryer. The family who lived above us had two little girls, and the father was assistant DA for the city. Another associate professor, new to UAF, moved into the downstairs duplex right next door. They had two little boys too, so we enjoyed them, and the father was quite a jokester who tried to upstage my husband. I applied for a job at the two clinics and at St. Joe's Hospital. I was hired at TVC Clinic, and it proved to be a very stressful job. There were just two of us in the lab, and the location of the lab could be described as a walkway. There were 5 entrances to the small room, and patients for x-ray, pediatrics, and general practice were ushered through. Nurses regularly yelled at us to hurry, and the resources there were really, for the lab, were really slim. They only had one microscope. I would often come home crying. After about 6 months, I got a call from the Fairbanks clinic manager. I really didn't want to work there because the lab supervisor had a bad reputation for being disagreeable. My husband wisely advised me that it may be her job they were interviewing me for. He was right. Seems that lab supervisor had an affair with one of the docs, and when he ditched her and married another, she took revenge by harassing him on his honeymoon. And then she And then she stole a number of checks from clinic co-workers and forged them and cashed them. She later did jail time for this. I was hired as lab supervisor at $6 an hour. Wow, I remember the manager saying, that's $1,000 a month. And Fairbanks Clinic at that time was located in a beautifully built upscale building in downtown Fairbanks, which is now the North Star School District building. The lab was small, but it was designed well, and there was one other medical technologist and one medical technician. The difference between a technologist and technician was the amount of education. The nurse-technologist relationships were a bit rocky due to the demeanor of the previous lab supervisor, and there was a lot of poor communication. We were able to get a handle on this and give better service to the patients, which helped the nurses to ease their hostility and advocate for their patients peaceably. That winter was the coldest and the snowiest ever. The low in January of 1971, and I looked this up, was minus 60, and the snowfall was around 140 inches. Being new, I thought this was normal until I visited with a patient at St. Joseph's Hospital. Her comment was, if this happens again, I'm leaving. It was fun, though, to have the snow, and I especially appreciated the heated garage. We bought our used downhill skis. They were 6 feet tall, and we went to Clary Summit. The hardest part was the T-bar. We got a used snow machine with a trailer, and we were able to go around at that time, the area around the Pioneers home was still pretty much forested. And that summer, with my parents' help, we bought a house on Pedro Street. A few years later, our boys were able to attend Denali Grade School, and my schedule at the clinic got me home before school was out. About a year later, the Fairbanks Clinic got the contract to do physicals for ARCO, for the pipeline. It was an exciting time to be in Fairbanks and a bit of mayhem for the clinic. Along with the regular patients, we processed over 100 workers a day. The record was 186. The state of Alaska Health Department decided that every new hire had to be screened for syphilis, which involved a blood draw. And ARCO also wanted a urinalysis and EKGs for those over 40 years old. This involved hiring three more techs. We organized so that we could process these physicals and still serve patients. The clinic smelled like a men's locker room and worse. Pipeline wannabe workers slept in their cars or under them, and they reeked. The worst job in the lab that we had to do in the lab was to do the EKGs. Back then, the electrode leads had to be put on the chest, arms, and legs, which means each one had to take off everything above their waist and roll up their pant legs. They tended to lie down and put their hands behind their head. Phew. Often they asked, do you want me to take off my shoes? To which we said, no. X-ray actually had it worse. They had to do chest and lower back x-rays, which involved more disrobing. I can remember them saying, first thing they asked is if they had had any undershorts on. But no wonder the place reeked. It was really a lucrative time for the clinic. We had about 18 doctors then. And retail clerks tried to organize the non-professional workers. I had to testify before the National Labor Board that med techs were professionals, and it seemed like management and staff were suspicious of each other. It was really an unpleasant time at the clinic. The union was voted down. About in 1975, there was a major disagreement between the corporation that owned the clinic building there on 5th Street. Dr. Scheibel had 51% of the stock, and the corporation that the clinics who rented that building. So these two corporations had a disagreement because the building corporation decided to raise the rent. This resulted in the physicians deciding to move into their own building, which was quite an interesting feat. The building was designed and constructed in Idaho and then barged up, transported to Fairbanks to be put together on Airport Road. The building is still in use today and is next to the Regal Theater and Wendy's. The clinic prospered, and some things done seemed a bit over the top. For instance, the clinic still had the contract for ARCO and had a physician stationed at Prudhoe Bay. The physician there complained to the manager that his microscope wasn't working. When the manager said something to me, I commented it was probably just needed a good cleaning. So he sent me up there to clean a microscope. The clinic put in satellite clinics in Delta Junction and Healy. I then got to make trips to those clinics to offer and to supervise. We also became a state-certified lab, which involved meeting lots of criteria and yearly inspections. Meanwhile, my husband's job got more political. He became president of the Faculty Senate, and he was very supportive of the then president, who was President Hyatt. When a disagreement between the regents and the president occurred, the regents hired an executive secretary to monitor the president. The president, who had been supported by my husband, then countered by hiring him as the assistant to the president. Turmoil ensued, and Hyatt left and had several rapid successors. During that time, my husband was attracted to another and subsequently left me and my two boys and got a divorce and remarried. Looking back, this was the worst and the best thing that could have happened. I won't detail the worst part. I really didn't want to become bitter. I did have a good job. I was able to keep the house. During this time, while the divorce was looming, my parents in Colorado were also having serious problems. At age 63, my mother was diagnosed with a disease I had never heard of before. This was about 1974, and the term Alzheimer's replaced senile dementia. Dad struggled with being her caretaker until he had to put her in a nursing home some 100 miles away. A year after he put her in the nursing home, Dad died. He was just 70 years old. I say he died of a broken heart, but the diagnosis was brain and lung cancer. He had been a smoker, but had quit maybe 7 years before that. Being in Alaska, I wasn't much help, but I did travel back to see him several times in that year. However, the best part was my realizing that I could not do all this alone. In the midst of this, I began to seriously pray. My casual, duty-bound relationship with the church and God became genuine, and I realized I needed a relationship with Jesus. I had lots of head knowledge about him, and I asked him to forgive me for my sins and come into my heart. Born again became a reality. Circumstances didn't change, but I changed, and I am forever grateful. One wonderful result was being able to forgive. I remember an incident where I saw my ex-husband, in the Pay and Save. That was quite a few years ago. And it was the first time I didn't feel I needed to hide, but greeted him as an old friend. We still get together for birthdays and Christmas. Mom died about 6 years ago. Mom died 6 years after she was, after Dad did. I visited with my brother a few times during that time, and she was unresponsive. She hadn't known me for years. My brother, who was able to drive the 100 miles more often to see her, said that when he left, he would stop on his way home to cry. Being in Alaska does place limitations on being there with family. I continued at Fairbanks Clinic until 1986. For years after the pipeline boom, there were rumors of the clinic closing. The lab manager at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital called and asked what I was going to do when the clinic closed. I told him that those rumors had been circulating for years. He asked me to come to talk to him, and I realized he wanted to hire me. Having been out of the larger hospital lab for many years, I thought I didn't want to work there unless I could work in microbiology, the section of the lab where cultures are done, and a part of the lab I had really learned to enjoy. And he offered me the microbiology supervisor position, which I accepted. One of the pathologists wanted the micro lab to have the same procedures at the hospital that he had taken his residence training. So Fairbanks Memorial sent me for training to Mayo Clinic in Rochester. They also sent me to more conferences as time went on, including one at the Cleveland Clinic. My sons were then in high school, and their dad was able to keep contact with them and was helpful in being there when I was gone. During the next few years, I remember telling a friend I didn't want to get married again. If I did, he would have to be a Christian. She mentioned Claude Claver. I had known his wife briefly before she was killed in a drunk driver accident, and I knew that she was pretty short. In fact, I think Claude says that she was 5'1.5". I surmised that Claude was also probably short. And with myself being 5'9", that crossed him off my list. However, she started a Christian singles group, and we met and have been married 27 years. It's been a great blessing. Claude retired just before we were married, but kept busy with many volunteer positions, and I was able to go to work just part-time. We enjoyed travel to Israel, Turkey, and Ireland. And with our RVs, we explored Alaska and a number of beautiful, beautiful places throughout the lower 48. We both sold our homes and bought a home in University West. Claude enjoys woodworking, and I had a lot of honeydew projects for him. I love gardening, enjoyed the great resources we have in our short but sunny season in Fairbanks. We are grateful to have a son and daughter and grandson and their families here in Fairbanks. We also have a son in Nikiski and a son in Portland and daughters in Missouri and New York. We're both active in our church and enjoy opportunities to serve. And so far, I don't have arthritis or much cabin fever. In 2013, I retired from my job, and I'm still too busy some days. We followed the development of Raven Landing for a number of years with the thought that we may want to live here. The time came in 2015, and we are grateful. It is a wonderful community, and we both have some old and some new friends here. The activities and programs available and the vision of those who work to make this place a reality have truly blessed us. And I'm back in my old neighborhood with lots of places to walk, both indoors and out. I really like living here.
Thank you so much, Joanne. I think that what really stands, one of the things that stands out to me is that you started out at 35 cents an hour, mm-hmm. and you actually decided your career trajectory in a half an hour study hall. I find that amazing. And to listen to how your career has grown and you've expanded and continued throughout your life. That was one of the very fascinating parts of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this concludes our interview with Claude and Joanne Claver. And I just wanted to comment that how what an honor it is to hear these wonderful life stories. And I'm sitting here under a picture frame that said a marriage blessing. And I just feel that it's very, very apropos for two of them. So thank you guys.
Thank you.